Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by New York Times bestselling author, host of the Hoop Collective podcast, live from the Cobra Dome. It's Brian Windhorst, and our NBA champ, who changes his background room and apparently his endless Houston mansion every day, Kendrick Perkins. Thank you, gentlemen, so much. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about the trade deadline because it's only a week away. So how do the Clippers deal with their point guard situation? We will ask Brian in another edition of Where in the World is Windy? But first, if you're going to have people over for dinner, you usually do not pick the 5 minutes before the doorbell rings to start rearranging the furniture. And yet that is sort of what happened last night. The Bucks were already on the court, warming up for what was sure to be a very spicy showdown with the East leading Sixers, when suddenly Milwaukee management pulled three players off the floor, leaving the rest of the team confused and, yep, shorthanded. Well, welcome to NBA trade season, fellas. It's not just a game of musical chairs, but couches, lamps, and tables, too. Some teams loading up for the playoffs, while others are holding yard sales. And indeed, that's what was going on with the Bucks, who last night pulled off a three-team deal with Houston and Phoenix that landed them not just defensive linebacker P.J. Tucker, but also, because of the way the teams switched assets around, gave the Bucks roster spots, money, and pick constructions that will let them make more moves in the coming days and weeks. It's all part of an arms race that's developing at the top of the Eastern Conference. And no, not the Bucks, nor Philly, nor the Heat, who yesterday pulled off their own trade for Trevor Ariza. None of those teams are going to make deals this week or next that will bring them a nuclear weapon level player like the Nets got in James Harden. But just because that level of ammo isn't available doesn't mean everyone else is going to give up and go home. And certainly if you watch the actual Bucks-Sixers game that followed all that transaction business, you saw two teams with plenty of fight. The Sixers, in particular, started the first half swinging, despite Joel Embiid still sitting out injured. Philadelphia jumped ahead by double digits, while the Bucks, understandably discombobulated by three players mysteriously disappearing just before tip, struggled to locate the exact coordinates of the basket. Milwaukee scored just 31 points in the first half, going 1-for-17 from three. But the second half was a different story. First, the Bucks came charging back, making a 13-0 run in the fourth. Then it was Philly's turn again. Take a look at Korkmaz taking advantage of a bad defensive gamble to hit a clean three to send the game to overtime. And then the man with the final word, Giannis, who went on a solo 7-0 OT run to put Milwaukee ahead for good. First the step back, and then, yep, whew, that's when he sat down on the court, which the Sixers promised they will remember come playoff time. Although, honestly, if I'm a true Philadelphian, I'm less worried about Giannis celebrating a regular season win and more concerned over what happened post-game between Giannis and a pile of cheesesteaks that were sitting out in the Bucks locker room. Watch this exchange here.
Hey, give me the steak one with the mushroom and cheese, American cheese, please.
In Philly, they call that whiz whip.
Give me the, this is the whiz whiz. I got the whiz whiz. Whiz whiz.
Yeah, not
whiz. That doesn't sound right to me though.
Whiz
whiz.
Whiz
whiz. Whiz whiz. Okay. That doesn't sound right to me. That sounds like it's kind of shaky. You know what I'm saying? But okay.
So many things going on in that clip. First of all, the local phrase is whiz wit, which frankly most native English speakers can't get, so Giannis gets a pass on that one. But what whiz wit actually means in Philadelphia is a cheesesteak with cheese whiz and onions, which is not even what Giannis asked for. Hey, this stuff is important if you grew up in the Northeast. So Giannis may want to take some cheesesteak lessons. After all, it could easily be the Sixers who the Bucks have a dinner date with at some point during the playoffs. And whether it is the furniture you are moving around or what you are cooking in the kitchen, now is the time to get it all right. So, Perk, does the trade for P.J. Tucker in your mind change your outlook on the Bucks in the East? Do you like how they're moving their furniture around?
Absolutely. Look, the Bucks organization promised Giannis that they were going to do everything in their power to help them get to the ultimate goal, and that's winning the championship. And acquiring P.J. Tucker is a huge upgrade, in my opinion. You talk about a guy that is relentless on the defensive end, that can switch 1-5, strong as an ox, does all the little things that doesn't show up in the stat sheet. And by the way, the one thing that he's going to bring to the table, he's going to bring that big brother mentality. That big brother mentality where you know you're walking into arenas or walking onto the court and you have P.J. Tucker who have your back. So now he brings a different type of swagger to this organization. And I think it was a huge upgrade for the Milwaukee Bucks. And now they're ready to compete with anybody in the Eastern Conference. Anybody.
Mm. Well, guys, which P.J. Tucker are they getting? Are they getting the P.J. Tucker that Perk just described? Or are they getting the P.J. Tucker who's having the worst season of his career? Fewest points, worst shooting, his defense has backslid, and I recognize that he was not motivated to play in Houston. There were times this year where he basically refused to shoot for games on end, and I realized that he wanted out of there, and so maybe that's what we've seen. But you guys, P.J. Tucker had very little value at the end of this because of the way he's played this year. I know that there was first-round picks involved in this deal, but when you really break it down, Milwaukee didn't give up much at all to trade for P.J. right now and was able to offload some money in the process that Houston took on some money. And I also want to point out that this is a bit of an indictment on the Bucks last offseason because they made D.J. Augustine their biggest offseason signing after a Bogdan Bogdanovich deal fell through and they were penalized for tampering. And then they signed Torrey Craig, who they thought was going to be a key member, who didn't even basically play for them, and they gave away essentially for free in this deal. Now, look, they did re-sign Giannis, and in the coming days, they may get a deal to extend Jrue Holiday, and those are the frontline important players. But as for bolstering this team, they really need P.J. Tucker to play like the P.J. Tucker of old, and they probably need another guard somewhere in free agent, somewhere picked up in a trade or free agency in the next couple of weeks to help fill in for D.J. Augustine.
Yeah, but Wendy, let me tell you something now. Yesterday, before the news broke, I was in the gym training my son, getting ready for AAU game, and guess what? P.J. Tucker was in the building, okay? P.J. Tucker was in the building getting shots up at the same gym. He looks in phenomenal shape. He was shooting the lights out. And look, he didn't want to be here in Houston. His time was up. He wanted to change the scenery. And he told me, man, I want to go to Milwaukee. I want to go there. I can help them. So I think we are going to see that P.J. Tucker of old, a guy that knows, hey, I'm playing for something. I'm not playing meaningless basketball or losing basketball. So we're going to see that P.J. Tucker that we've grown to love from the past.
Perk, that is burying the lead. You have your own personal scouting report and reporting on P.J. Tucker before this deal became public, that he was going to Milwaukee, and that you were scouting him, too. This is very impressive, Perk.
Rachel, I did not report it. It was hard. I actually knew 6 hours before the news broke. But you know what? P.J. Tucker talked to me confidentially, and he told me not to share, and I gave him my word. So I didn't say anything.
There you go, Perk. I will say this. Look, he's 35 years old, so we don't know for sure what he is going to be in a more energized environment. But I don't think it was just motivation that was keeping his numbers down in Houston this year. The whole team was collapsing, expanding, recollapsing around him. It's kind of like the discussion we have about Blake Griffin and trying to anticipate what he's going to bring to the Nets. I kind of have to throw out what happened in Detroit this year, and it's a clean slate. So going forward with Blake, and it is going to be a clean slate going forward with PJ. We will see if he is the player he has been in previous years. I want to move on, guys, though, to the league incentivizing players to get vaccinated. They have now announced they are going to loosen protocols for players and teams that choose to do so. According to a story from our Baxter Holmes, the NBA and Players Association sent a memo last night about agreed upon changes to the health and safety protocols. A fully vaccinated player is defined as any player 2 weeks past their final dose. And here are a few of the relaxed protocols for those players. Friends, family, and others can visit at home and on the road without testing or registering with the team. No testing on off days, and in-person sponsorship marketing events will be allowed, which means you can go shoot your commercials again. Teams with 85% of staff fully vaccinated will have the following changes to their protocol. No masks required at the practice facility, more flexibility to leave the team hotel on the road, can dine indoors or outdoors at restaurants, fancy, and in-person team meetings are allowed. So, Brian, there has been some skepticism about the vaccine throughout the NBA population, but this is a pretty strong incentive sheet. How do you think players will react to this?
Well, everyone's worried about health first. Let's make clear that they just want to make sure that the players are protected. You say incentive, Rachel. That's an accurate way of saying it. Another way of saying it could be bribe. They want the players, as many players as possible, to get this these shots when they become available. And according to what the president and other local health authorities have said, that could be within the next month. NBA players could be at their turn in line. And look what's happening right now with the NCAA tournament. We have a number of teams that aren't sure which players are going to be available this upcoming weekend. Look what happened in the All-Star game with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. They were out, and they were out for contact tracing. They were not sick. They were out because they were exposed to somebody. And just think if that had happened in the middle of a playoff series. You would have to potentially derail the series or maybe lose the series because of contact tracing. And so while, yes, the NBA does want to make sure their players are healthy, they also want to protect the league and protect the integrity of the playoffs. And they're going to try to offer the players all kinds of, without being crude, incentives. Goodies, freedoms back to go get those shots.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I want to applaud the NBA and the Players Association for actually giving everyone their option and let them choose whether or not they want to get the vaccine or not. But you're right. Right now, what they're doing is playing chess. They're saying, hey, look, if you go get the vaccine and get vaccinated, this is what's going to happen. The protocols are going to lean. You're going to be able to do more. And that's just encouraging them to actually go out there and get the vaccine, which I'm on the lines of encouraging a lot of people to go get it themselves. I'm going to get mine this weekend. So, hey, go get it. I think it's best for everybody that they do get it. And you're right, Wendy, looking at the conference tournaments, teams having to be canceled, guys not being available. So it is key to get the vaccine. My wife didn't got it. Nothing happened to her. She felt perfectly fine. So I had to make her the test dummy first before I went got it.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear the Vanity's in good spirits. I'm glad that you are getting yours upcoming. And I will say, it's not just a personal advantage for players who want to have more freedoms on the road. And obviously, I'm making a joke about the number of people they're allowed to have and who they're allowed to have. But it is limiting. It stinks. People have had their parents come wanting to see them at games, and they've had trouble seeing them. So this is something that might help the guys personally, just with all the stress everyone's been carrying around for the last year, both outside the NBA and in it. But also a competitive advantage. You could have in-person team meetings. You guys don't have to wake up at all hours to test. That things can kind of return to a normal flow of basketball. I think that's going to matter to a lot of teams. It will incentivize the teams as well. All right, guys, coming up, Ja Morant deciding to point at his defender after making him stumble last night. Was the move or the point more disrespectful? We will discuss. Tune in to the Jump's NBA trade deadline special. It's coming. The crank is back, people. I could cry, really. I really could. Next Thursday, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on ESPN. 2 hours of coverage leading up to and after the deadline. Live reaction from our Jump regulars. Don't miss it. And with 1 week left until the trade deadline, I now welcome in our ESPN front office insider, Bobby Marks. First off, I want to get your thoughts on how much the play-in tournament is going to affect teams leading up to the deadline, because the pool expands now from 8 to 10. Now, the top six get to avoid all of the scenarios, right? But, Bobby, if you look then at the teams that now are going to get in that might have been sellers in the past, what do you think they're going to do?
Yeah, I think we're going to see less sellers at the trade deadline. And I'll give you an example. Chicago, they're sitting in the 9 spot right now. That would get them in at the play-in tournament. Teams would love to have Thaddeus Young on their team. Tomas Satoransky is another player that some of these top 3 or top 4 teams would love to have on their team. They're not sellers right now because it is a priority for them to get into the playoff, for some of their younger players to play meaningful minutes when we get into May. Indiana's another good example. They're sitting at number 10. Doug McDermott's making a run for Sixth Man of the Year. Teams would love to have Doug McDermott on their roster, but they're not in that sell mode right now. They've got Caris LeVert back. Hopefully TJ Warren gets back soon. So you're going to see probably less sellers when we get closer to that deadline next week, but there'll still be trades out there, but probably not as many as we've seen in the past here.
Well, it's a chess checkers situation too, right? Because there are a lot of teams that if they had previously been on the fence and they were not going to sell, if you're a team that goes the other way and decides, all right, no one else is selling, we're going to sell, you can be getting a lot more value, right, Bobby, for your prospects than you would maybe in another year if there's more desperate buyer teams out there and less sellers. Maybe you jump into that void.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we saw yesterday with, you know, Trevor Ariza going to Miami, with P.J. Tucker going to Milwaukee, that Milwaukee was somewhat desperate to get a player like Tucker, and kind of what they had to give up to get him. And certainly, I think the one team, Rachel, to keep an eye on, that could be a seller, but also a buyer, is New York, who's sitting right at that number eight spot, which would be in that play-in tournament. But they, you know, they're a game out of getting up to number five. $15 million in cap space. They've got a ton of players on expiring contract. Alec Burks, Nerlens Noel. It would be hard for me to see them get rid of one of those two players. When you've got $15 million in cap space and Andre Drummond is still in that marketplace, we'll see what happens with the New York next week.
All right, you got all the Knicks fans engaged now, and it is time for another edition. Let's bring some other cities into it. Where in the world is Brian Windhorst? Brian, where you at?
I'm in Los Angeles, Rachel. I'm expecting an invitation to dinner, mm-hmm. an outside socially distanced dinner, of course.
Clearly.
I'll wait for that after the show. So the LA Clippers really need a point guard, not just because Patrick Beverley is having knee problems, but because at the end of games, they have really had trouble getting into their offense. It's been an issue dating back to last season. The problem is they just don't have a lot of options. They have less than $1 million under the hard cap, which means if they make any trade, it's got to be for a player that makes less money, and they can't be much of a player in any sort of buyout free agent market. And then you also have the reality that they don't have much to trade. They can't trade any first round picks going forward. They do have second round picks that they can trade, but there's limited value there. And if they were to trade for anybody, they probably would have to include a guy like Lou Williams in the trade. And that's a guy who's very valuable to them. If they're looking for one guy to look for, keep an eye on George Hill with the Oklahoma City Thunder, who's been out with surgery on his hand. He's a guy who played for Ty Lue in Cleveland and could fit there, but it would probably take a trade of Lou Williams to get that to happen. So they just don't have a lot of options. They could really use somebody to get surprise bought out. Would really help them. Last year they got Reggie Jackson in the buyout market. They've been starting Reggie recently, but they need an upgrade there, and there's not a lot of options for them to do it.
Yeah, Brian, you're actually in the hard cap capital of the NBA, which is Los Angeles, because it's both LA teams that are hard capped. The Lakers are 1.5 and the Clippers are right around 538. And you hit it right on the head. The Clippers would love to get their hands on George Hill from Oklahoma City. He is on a great contract, partially guaranteed for next year. But as you said, to become a buyer, you also have to be a seller, and it would likely cost you a player like Lou Williams, who makes $8 million, and then you'd have to add a little bit more money. But the one thing that the Clippers do have somewhat of an advantage is they have 10 second round picks. They wound up getting four back in that Luke Kennard trade. So they've got a little bit more flexibility from a draft standpoint than the Lakers, who are about $1.5 million under that hard cap.
So, Perk, do you like that idea, bringing in George Hill, even if it means giving up Lou Williams?
I do. I actually love it. George Hill is a guy that T. Lou is familiar with. I was on that team when we went to the finals in Cleveland, mm-hmm. and George Hill fit in just fine. He's a guy that's going to play defense at a high level. He's a combo-type guard, but he's also a guard that could get you a point guard that could run the offense and take that load off of Kawhi and PG. As I said before, Rachel, watching them down the stretch, they don't have their legs because they have to do so much. I would also monitor the Toronto Raptors situation. We don't know what's going to happen with Kyle Lowry. I doubt that it happened, but if it do and Kyle Lowry gets bought out, hey, I would think that he would join the Clippers, knowing his relationship with Ty Lue, Chauncey Billups, and by the way, two of his guys that he won a championship, and Kawhi Leonard and Serge Ibaka is there. So I would keep a close eye on that. I don't know if Atlanta is going to give up Rajon Rondo, because they're starting to win games. They're on the winning streak right now. He's the veteran leader in that locker room. He's a mentor to Trae Young. But Kyle Lowry and George Hill are two-point guards that I think the Clippers could use and that they need, and I would keep a close eye on both of those situations.
Well, Perk, I hate to break this to you. I don't really see Masai Ujiri giving up Kyle Lowry and not getting anything back. But, you know, hey, everyone can dream. The Atlanta question, though, I mean, Brian, where are you now, actually?
I'm in the lemon pepper wing capital of the NBA, the Atlanta, Georgia, home of the red hot Atlanta Hawks, who have shot up the rankings after making a coaching change. Now, the Hawks have a player that a lot of teams are calling about. That's young power forward John Collins. He did not come to a contract extension with Atlanta before the season, and that has led teams to try to pry him out of Atlanta. And the problem is that their offers haven't impressed the Hawks so far. The trouble here is Atlanta doesn't want multiple draft picks. Atlanta wants players. Maybe they'll take a draft pick, but they want players to help them compete this year. They haven't made the playoffs since 2017, but John Collins only makes $4 million. And so that's difficult to make a trade that would help Atlanta move the ball forward. Right now, I would suspect that John Collins remains an Atlanta Hawk into next week. Of course, we'll see if they get blown away at the deadline with the trade offer.
Bobby, how valuable a piece do you see Collins being? He is still on his rookie deal.
Yeah, and he's on an expiring contract. He's a restricted free agent, so Atlanta would have the right to match any offers this summer. And as Brian said, they're playing great basketball. I think if I was Atlanta, what I would do is I'd take a look at the standings out west, and I would eyeball a team like Sacramento, who's dying to get into the playoffs, that needs the power forward to pair next to maybe Marvin Bagley or Rashawn Holmes, and would give up some draft picks that could be awfully appealing. And if it maybe even it cost you a good lottery pick, and that would be appealing if I was the Kings. And I think that's appealing if I'm at Atlanta, if I'm looking to kind of get rid of John Collins, where you get some value back in the draft.
Well, Rachel, listen, if you'd asked me this about 2 months ago, I would have said, you know what, it's time for Atlanta to shop John Collins and trade him. But as of right now, since him and Trae Young probably didn't have they come in a Jesus meeting and they didn't hash things out, those two are playing extremely well together. They're playing the gender-free basketball. They're having fun. They both are under the age of 25, which means that they could grow. If I'm the Atlanta Hawks, I keep John Collins. I'm not answering no phone calls. I keep him. I let him play it out, earn his money, show us why we should pay you X amount of dollars, and build from there. I think with him and Trae Young, that's a great foundation to start for the Hawks. They're winning games right now. I would not answer the phone if I'm the Atlanta Hawks.
I love that phrase, Perk, agenda-free basketball. We need more of that. All right, Brian, last but not least, what other food are you picking up for our outdoor socially distanced dinner tonight? Where are you?
Can I interest you in some of the finest Mexican you could ever find? The Alamo City. It's going to be fantastic. How do you feel about chorizo tacos, Rachel? We'll talk about it later. The Spurs are in a very unusual position, which is having to deal with a disgruntled player. We just don't see that very often. We know LaMarcus Aldridge has been shut down, and they have continued to have trade talks. The issue here, they have offers for him, okay? They could trade LaMarcus by sundown here in San Antonio if they wanted to. But the issue is, are they willing to take back long-term money? They have salary cap space to burn next year. They could do that without impacting their roster. But this is not something they've done in the past. Take on bad money for draft picks or trade a guy out to take on somebody's long-term deal. I suspect, as most of the league does, they are not going to find a deal that they like and that LaMarcus will get bought out by next Thursday. But San Antonio was still listening to offers, and there are a few on the table that they could go with if they decide to go a route we don't expect.
All right, so Bobby, help walk me through the next step. If LaMarcus is bought out by the Spurs, who are some potential suitors for him once he's free and clear?
Well, I think certainly the Lakers, who have two roster spots to go out and sign him. I think we can probably keep an eye on what happens in Miami as far as a backup to Bam Adebayo, who's been a little bit nicked up. Boston, could certainly help as far as from a front court standpoint. I think, Rachel, the perfect team would be Phoenix. I think he would be a perfect fit in Phoenix, backing up DeAndre Ayton. Suns would have to create a roster spot. But yeah, I agree with Wendy on this. And the one thing with San Antonio, they do not make trades. The last trade that they've made during the regular season was in 2014.
Well, I just don't see a lot of teams reaching out to try to get LaMarcus Aldridge. He's not what you need in today's league. If you have a today's big, you want a guy that's either going to be able to stretch the floor and knock down the three-point shot consistently, or a guy that's a dynamic roller and snatching the screws out the rim. If I'm the Phoenix Suns, I would not take interest in LaMarcus Aldridge because their core is set. Their chemistry is there. Sockridge has been playing well at their backup minutes for him backing up DeAndre Ayton. And when you look at the Boston Celtics, that's the team that he should go to. He could come in, long as he accepts a lesser role and provide a spark for them off the bench, which they're missing and lacking in depth for us having guys come in off the bench. So Boston, to me, seems like the real option for Aldridge, especially once he gets bought out.
Kirk, I'm shocked to hear you advocating on behalf of the Celtics. And Bobby, I'm going to go one more for you. You are absolutely, of course, as always, Bobby Marks is right that it was 2014, the last time the Spurs made an in-season trade. But that was a pretty minor trade. We here at The Jump like to go back to 2013 for their last major in-season trade because we like to call it the Jump trade. It was a Steven Jackson, Richard Jefferson deal that swapped for it. So, you know, we like that too. Bobby, thank you so much for joining
us. Boy, did that one work out.
Yeah, well... Oh, truer words, Bobby, truer words. Thank you so much. We will check in with you very soon and see you as the trade deadline approaches. Brian, you head back to the Cobra Dome. Don't forget to fill out your expense report. We'll see you in the next segment. Coming up, the Nets made it to the top of the East standings despite injuries to KD and Kyrie. Should we expect them to hold serve for the rest of the season? Stick around to find out. Now, despite no KD and no Kyrie, the Nets keep rolling, beating the Pacers last night behind James Harden's 16th career 40-point triple-double. By the way, our friend Vince Carter, the only other player in Nets history to have a 40-point triple-double, but, you know, it's a different time now. The win along with Philly's loss to Milwaukee brings the Nets and Sixers into a tie atop the East. They've got one more head-to-head meeting April 14th. Brian, do you expect the Nets will finish as the top seed in the East even as KD continues to sit? He's got that strained left hamstring. They're just being super careful, and with KD's injury history, you can understand why.
Yeah, I do, because they win without KD. They win without Kyrie. They win without KD and Kyrie. They have so much firepower. And, you know, the 76ers, they're going to be without Embiid for at least a couple more weeks. They have the best record in the NBA over the last two seasons. They're second best this year. They were the best last year. So home court advantage in the potential conference finals between Philly and Brooklyn would be meaningful. And it's meaningful not just for Philly trying to get it, but for Brooklyn trying to keep it out of their hands. And as well as James Harden is playing right now, I think the Nets keep on winning.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Look, it's a reason that they are winning is because they have the best player in the league that's dominating. That's James Harden. Yes, I said, sorry to LeBron, sorry to Giannis, but right now, James Harden is the best player in the league. The way that he's playing is the best of his career. He's shooting at a high efficiency rate. He's making others around him better. And right now, if James Harden keeps this up, to me, it's a no-brainer when Kyrie and Kevin Durant returns that the Brooklyn Nets possibly could win this championship. If James Harden could keep this up throughout the postseason, they will win the championship. Rachel, I see you shaking your head, but here's the thing.
Berg, I'm shaking my head because you keep saying the Sixers are coming out of the East. How are the Nets going to win the title if they're not in the finals, Berg?
I know you was going to say that, Rachel, because I still got the Sixers coming out of the Eastern Conference. But what I'm saying is we have seen this type of play or something similar to this and with James Harden in the regular season. I'm saying we haven't seen this type of James Harden in the postseason. Mm-hmm. So now is his time to show us that he could carry this same type of play that he's playing right now over to the postseason. I still have the 76ers, and I'm standing by that. But I have to give credit where credit's due, Rachel. That's all.
Right. I understand. You've got all the numbers swirling around your head. I like it. I will say that in the James Harden trade to Brooklyn, we talked about the points he was going to bring, the attitude he was going to bring. We talked after the first couple weeks he got there, how much he was willing to be a facilitator and elevate everyone else around him. I don't think we've talked quite enough, though, about his durability and the fact that he just shows up and plays every game. And obviously people in Houston have known that for a while, but especially for this Brooklyn team where, frankly, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, because of their own injury issues and Brooklyn being smart about just preserving those guys for the playoffs, they are in and out and in and out. And that could have led to a very volatile year, maybe like the Clippers had last season for Brooklyn, but instead they are getting that steadiness from James Harden. I think that really matters, so we'll see how we go forward. All right, we're going to talk PG's post-game comments after the break. All right, the Clippers could not beat the Mavs twice in three nights. They were just held to 89 points, only 11 free throw attempts on Wednesday. Luka scored 42. Nasty move to seal the win. But those lack of free throws, they did not make Paul George happy, friends.
It's insane that we're not getting these calls, but it is what it is. It's nothing new to me. Hopefully we'll send a bunch of clips in. League's got to take a look at this. A bunch of lies. Can't go too much further than that. It's a bunch of lies. They know what's going on. We're not flopping players. We're not players that's like throwing our bodies into other players. Like, we play physical. Like, no different than any other player in this league, you know? There's nothing more that we can do.
Perk, some strong words from PG there. Does he have a point?
No, he don't have a point, Rachel. Listen, I'm tired of excuses. This is why you love PG at times. And then sometimes you just got to shake your head. Don't go talk about complaining about the referees. You should have been saying it's a shame how we let Luka torture us for 42 points and do whatever the hell he wanted to do. That's what he should have been talking about, defense, in the press conference.
There's a couple of metrics that imply that the Clippers don't get the calls and Paul George doesn't get the calls that he's entitled to. But this, to Perk's point, this is the third time in the last year he's complained about this after a rough road loss. And obviously that tact is not working. Maybe try a different route.
Well, they say he mentioned sending in clips to the league. Brian, what else can the Clippers do if they're – I mean, because talking about it publicly is part of the game, right? It puts more scrutiny on the league.
For sure. Yes, this is absolutely a move that they need to do, and they probably talked about this in the forehand. But like I said, it's not working what they're doing. They probably need to try a different route.
Very interesting. There's going to be so much action going on in the NBA in the next few days. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll help you sort it all out.